We're elevating how Texas banks. Texas Capital Bank. Member FDIC. TexasCapitalBank.com.
Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We're two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation with the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate. This is our short week Thanksgiving edition.
And the Cowboys just made a turkey out of the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. 40-3 was the final. Now the New York Giants come to town on Thursday, and in some ways, this might be the Odell Beckham Jr. Bowl.
Tony Pollard, Dak Prescott, that defense, it was all clicking in Minneapolis. Are we buying into each, or is there any part to sell? Also, Luke Gifford joins us from the locker room, and later we will discuss what Micah Parsons is doing off the field.
He's got a very cool plan for one day when he retires. Sports Day Cowboys starts now.
You have a 3-year plan and a 30-year plan. At Texas Capital Bank, we've transformed our bank to offer solutions that will grow with you. From enhanced treasury management and corporate banking to personal banking and wealth management, we're dedicated to delivering the full service support you need to secure the growth and success of your business. All from a full service financial firm founded and headquartered in Dallas, Texas. Texas Capital Bank. Member FDIC. TexasCapitalBank.com.
I watched Sunday's shellacking at U.S. Bank Stadium. I was there. You watched it, Calvin. You were there. You know who else watched it? Mr. Odell Beckham Jr. I'd be surprised at this point if he doesn't sign. It's something when the Cowboys players get off the field, they go to the locker room, and then before the team flight back home, they're already messaging on social media, making it known that they want Odell Beckham in Dallas. I think it gets done. Do you think they're going to land him?
It'd be very interesting. I was talking to someone after that Vikings game, and I said, what's the deal with Beckham? And they said there's two major things. Coming off the torn ACL, something that happened in the Super Bowl when he's playing for the Rams in that game against the Bengals. And the second thing I was told was that Beckham wants a multi-year deal. And I'm not sure if the Cowboys really want to give Beckham a multi-year deal. To me, it's a one-year rental, or really a one-month rental. You're getting him for the last end of December, and you're getting him for a potential deep playoff run, which means you're getting to the Super Bowl. So, and if I'm Beckham, who has said on previous podcasts that he wants to, you know, build a home, meaning he wants a big money contract from somebody, I don't know if I give that to him. I mean, he's 30 years old, coming off his second major injury. I think he's torn his ACL twice in his career. And while I thought he was very good for the Rams toward the end of last year, I'm not sure what you're going to get in a multi-year deal with Beckham.
Okay, well, let's, you know what, we'll just table all Beckham talk further until he signs, or at least until next week, because of the way things kind of go around here. So let's break it down. Are we believers in all that we saw Sunday? First one, Tony Pollard. 189 total yards, career high, 2 touchdowns. He handled more than 14 carries for the second straight game in the second time period in his NFL career. He didn't do it once the first 3-plus years of his career. Seems like the Cowboys are using him more. You buying what you saw from Pollard in this run game?
Yes, I am. You know, there's this big debate, Michael, about whether or not they should start Tony Pollard over Zeke Elliott. To me, the way they're doing it now is perfect. If Tony Pollard gets – look, in that game, they each had 15 carries. You know what I'm saying? Pollard – and we talked about this previous week when I said Pollard should be the starter, and I think he should be. And the way they're using Pollard in the passing game, in the finesse running game, that's perfect. Zeke Elliott is your power guy. 2 of the touchdown runs he got in the Vikings game were on power runs. It's okay if that's how you're going to use him. It takes a little pressure off Zeke, to be honest with you. He does have a bad knee. So I believe in what they're doing with the run game. And here's a little known fact. I like Malik Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, like Malik Davis, every time he's come in there in mop-up duty, he's done pretty good. And it's not against the scrubs. It's against the 2s and the 1s. So he's doing okay. I like Malik Davis. I do like this running attack.
I do too. I laughed because we last week we disagreed on who should start between Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. I said Zeke because the way he dents the defense with his physical downhill running style. You said Pollard. We both agree. Pollard should see more on this offense than he has in the past. And I think that's the most important part. And that's what thus far the Cowboys are doing with him. How about Dak's day? 22-25, 276 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. Calvin, buying it?
Oh, I'm definitely buying it. He had a quarterback rating of 139.3. It was just one of his better days. It seems as if when he played against the Bears, which seems like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, he had a fantastic game. And Jerry Jones had said, this is the best I've seen Dak. Well, I wonder what he would say after the Vikings game. And he said Dak was fantastic. And there was a lot of criticism on Prescott from the previous week, which kind of surprised me in that Packer game. Because, yeah, he threw 2 interceptions, and I wouldn't think he was erratic. In that overtime, the Cowboys were self-destructive, and Dak Prescott was bailing them out. And I thought Dak was pretty good in that game. Was he elite? No, but you can't be elite every week because, if you remember, Aaron Rodgers wasn't elite the previous week when he played against the Lions and threw 3 interceptions. So this is an interesting thing, the criticism when it comes to Dak Prescott. I just thought the Dak Prescott we saw against the Vikings was the Dak Prescott that Jerry Jones signed to the richest contract in franchise history.
And I think everything you just described there is why, if I was an athlete, I wouldn't listen, not to say people like you and me, but like to some level, yeah, I wouldn't listen to media. I wouldn't listen to the outside because last week, people were down on Dak Prescott. I mean, really just super critical of him. I think, frankly, a lot of it was unfair. Like, if you're really to break down those 2 interceptions, you know, one of them, you know, he and CeeDee Lamb weren't on the same page. Lamb knew that he's got to get across the safety face. And the other one, you could just argue that the Cowboys shouldn't have called that play and that tight end of a red zone. And then Dalton Schultz didn't get, you know, there was just a clearance that didn't happen and bad spacing between Schultz and Lane. So I just, the interceptions were part of the reason why people were really negative on Dak when that wasn't really, neither of those interceptions was on him. And so here we are this week and people are loving him up a bit more. And honestly, I think the one part of it that I think is the most important element of it is what Dak is doing right now with his legs. There was a 3rd and 6, and he made a check the line of scrimmage before the snap and changed into a keeper, a guy 11 yards. There was one play he ran. He traveled more than 40 yards for a 1 yard gain. And so that maybe it was a bit of an outlier, not something you're looking for every one, but I think still you just saw the athleticism. You saw the decision-making, how smart he was with the football. No turnovers, wasn't sacked once. I thought that was just really impressive, just how smart he was from an execution standpoint, and really execution. If you're going to win 43, execution's pretty good. How about defense, Calvin? 7 sacks.
That was an awesome performance.
Yeah, Vikings could get they had 1 third-down conversion all game. But I'm just going to – we got to mention it. Dalvin Cook, 6.6 yards per carry. And that was the one thing going into the game we were looking at. Could the Cowboys stop the run? Didn't really matter, but that was still a pretty efficient game from Cook.
Well, yeah, no, he's a good running back. And overall, you know, the Vikings had 73 yards of rushing. And, you know, when you look back at that game, maybe they got away from the run a little too soon. You know, that first possession, you know, when Kirk Cousins, you know, loses the ball because Micah – Parsons had a strip sack and those optional recovers, and you know the Cowboys started rolling. The game got away from Minnesota. Now, Thanksgiving Day, they got Saquon Barkley, and we'll be interested to see how he does. But yes, the Cowboys' ability to stop the run is going to be a season-long thing. As I said, that game got away from the Vikings, and they had to throw the ball over the field. Who knows if that game was a little bit closer if Dalvin Cook doesn't get over 100 rushing yards. And I'm not saying the Vikings get 200 rushing yards, which is what the Packers got the previous week and what the Bears got before that. But I will say you got to be concerned with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley on Thanksgiving Day, because Jones, he had like 70 yards the first time they met, and because he got out of pocket and the Cowboys weren't disciplined in their rush lanes. Saquon Barkley is finally healthy after 2 or 3 years of leg injuries, and he's moving around that field, and the Giants have a pretty good offensive line. Now, the receiving corps has got some injuries, but if they're going to run the football, you know, they got two good weapons to do it in with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. So I am concerned about the Cowboys run defense, even though Dalvin Cook only had 73 yards rushing in that game.
So we agree all across the board. We're buying Pollard in this run game. We're buying Dak Prescott in the game that we saw from him on Sunday. And with this defense, that was a game script that is the Cowboys type of game. Big lead, get after the quarterback, left tackle exits the game early with a concussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, they feasted on that offensive line. They feasted on Kirk Cousins. Let's reserve judgment. If we're going to be critical about the run defense, as we were last week, as we have been at times this season, let's wait and see exactly whether or not the Cowboys have improved truly at stopping the run.
And what also was big in that game was Trayvon Diggs. We don't say enough about, you know, we talk a lot about Micah Parsons on our podcast, but we don't talk enough about Trayvon Diggs. Now, he didn't shadow Justin Jefferson, who was the Vikings' top receiver going into that ball game, but he did have him a good majority of the game.
And I think what's really telling, Calvin, is the way that teams aren't testing Trayvon Diggs mm-hmm. the way they did last season. It's not because Trayvon Diggs has elite ball skills and they're worried about him intercepting passes. That didn't stop teams game after game from being very aggressive throwing at Diggs last season. It's because he's much more refined in his technique. He's much more patient. He's not just trying to get interceptions at times like it seemed last season again at spots. He's just – you know, a guy who learned cornerback in college at Alabama, who's now in his third NFL season, he's going to get better. And his technique improvement has really, I think, caught the rest of the NFL's attention. And so, as you said, he saw a lot of Justin Jefferson. We didn't see a lot of Justin Jefferson in terms of the stat sheet. And that, I think, is a credit to Diggs and what he provides.
And you know what, Michael, it's not just offense and defense, it's special teams. And Michael, you had a great interview coming up with Luke Gifford, the leader of the Cowboys special teams unit. You know what? Our weekly interview is coming up next with Michael and Luke Gifford.
You have a 3-year plan and a 30-year plan. At Texas Capital Bank, we've transformed our bank to offer solutions that will grow with you. From enhanced treasury management and corporate banking to personal banking and wealth management, we're dedicated to delivering the full-service support you need to secure the growth and success of your business. All from a full-service financial firm founded and headquartered in Dallas, Texas. Texas Capital Bank. Member FDIC. TexasCapitalBank.com.
Welcome back to Sports Day Cowboys. This week, I stood in the locker room and got a chance to talk with Luke Gifford, a fourth-year linebacker for the Cowboys who really has found a rhythm, a leadership role on special teams. He's seen the second most snaps on special teams of anyone on the team, second only to Kelvin Joseph. But boy, as a leader, the way that he has embraced John Fossil, the way that he's become emblematic of just a team that's hyper-competitive in this area. He's the guy to speak to about the special teams unit, about things at large. Here is Luke Gifford.
So, Luke, a short week like this, making that switch from Sunday to Thursday as a player, what exactly is that like?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one, you know. This week's more about getting the body right and staying clean, like on the mental side of things, watching a lot of film. But yeah, it's mainly about getting to the point where you're feeling like you're ready to go again come Thursday.
Divisional opponents, mm-hmm. I imagine that probably helps given the familiarity scheme-wise
and
personnel.
Yeah, you know, they're guys we see every year, twice a year, so there is familiarity and we kind of have a good idea what they like to do both on defense and or on offense and on special teams, so that definitely helps. But yeah, we'll definitely be doing more. It's more mental this week than anything.
Thanksgiving, yeah. A little different atmosphere. What do you do? Do you have family in town, or how have you look over the course of your career kind of learned to embrace it?
Yeah, my girlfriend's family is coming into town, so it'll be good to have them. But just playing on Thanksgiving in general is just such a blessing. You know, I think it's one of those things you grow up wanting to do, and to be able to do it for the Cowboys is extra special. So. Just one of those things that you never take for granted. You never know how many you're going to get of them. And to be out there on Thanksgiving is a cool experience for sure.
It seems like every room, in terms of coach, you know, position room and coordinator, every room's different.
Yep.
Bones, John's Fossil, special teams coordinator, his room seems particularly distinct with his energy. Yeah. What's that style been like for you playing under now for three seasons?
It's awesome, man. He makes every day fun. Everything's a good competition between everyone in the room. And I think you ask anybody and they'd probably say it's the most fun they've ever had playing special teams, you know, and probably football in general. You know, I've loved playing for him, and I know I can speak for everyone on the team and on special teams when I say that.
What did you do? What about how does he make it so fun?
You know, first of all, he's a really positive guy, and I think one thing about him is he's just super encouraging to everyone, and the way he teaches is, you know, he's super constructive and he builds people up. I think that's one of the biggest things. Makes everyone feel involved, whether you're on practice squad or you're a guy that's out there on all four special teams. So he's just a pretty special coach, honestly.
Yeah. What's the competitive? It seems like a friendly competition that you guys have with the point system, and maybe can you explain to people who aren't aware of kind of the in-house way you guys track?
Yeah. So it's really based off participation and then tackles, and we call it lockdowns and knockdowns. So those three things get us extra points. But having as many good players as we do on special teams, it kind of just creates this competition throughout the room that, like, you know, every week is a race to see who's going to get the most points, you know, and 500 is the goal. But we're trying to break records. I'm not sure what the record is. I know it's in the 900s somewhere, I believe. So we got a lot of good players in our room that, you know, that's the end goal. So it makes a lot of fun.
You had a game a couple of weeks ago talking about getting to 1,000, which, you know, pretty difficult to do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of luck goes involved.
Right.
But the game that you had, 102 points that you registered. You had five tackles. You had a fumble recovery on a kickoff return that kept the game tight in the second quarter. What was that like when there's that much action that some of it, right place, right time, but some of it you're also creating with solo tackle and punt coverage?
Yeah, it was fun, man. It's probably one of the more fun experiences I've had playing football. It's one of those things where you kind of just get in a zone and it's like tunnel vision almost, like flow. You know, you hear people like Kobe going out there, and when he's making every basket, it's just like there's nothing, everything outside of what he's doing is just irrelevant, you know, and it's kind of like that. But I know one thing, it wouldn't be possible without the guys that I have around me, you know, and I think CJ and Fat would say the same things. And it's not just CJ and Fat, there's a lot more I can name everybody. So I think the group that we have allows everyone to have games like that. And we talked about it earlier this week, but we're each an extension of each other. You know, when one person has a big game, we all have a big game. So just each week is a little different who it might be.
You mentioned Kelvin Joseph, CJ Goodwin.
Yep.
How good are they, not just as gunners and in coverage, but also in punt return?
Yeah.
What that does for you guys when they're able to single up gunners as jammers?
No, they're elite. You know, I think when you watch film, you really see a lot of teams around the league having to vice guys on punt return, or you know, that frees us up to do a lot of different things. So when we know that we can put them out there on an island and they're going to lock somebody up, that's pretty special. So it allows us to go after the punt and rush and do a bunch of different things. So we appreciate everything they do, for sure.
Kamonte Turpin, one of these days.
Yep.
There seems like all season you guys have been talking about how it's coming.
Yep.
Is there – do you guys still feel like, especially now with more experience over the course of the season, that you guys are getting to really lock in on those details that can be the difference on a touchdown return?
For sure, yeah. You know, I think it's – punt return and kick return really is one of the phases that it's just playing ball. It's like sometimes it ends up like being in the backyard, you know. It's just – so we know that at any time Turp could break free, and we're just going to keep doing what we do. Not going to press, you know, it'll happen when it's supposed to happen. So, we're just keep doing our thing and Turp will make it happen.
And lastly, what's it just like being part of this locker room right now, coming off a big win, 43 against the Vikings on Sunday?
Yep.
I think that to a lot of people, they saw that as something of a statement when you go into the Vikings house, the place is loud, and have a result like that. What was it like in the locker room, on the flight home, and just overall in this building?
You know, I think one of the best things about this season is just this team. You know, it's probably one of the closest teams I've been on even throughout college. So I think that's one of the things that one of the main reasons as to why we're having success is because of how close we are to each other. You know, we can hold each other accountable and understand that each person in here is coming from a place of love and caring about you. So it's honestly been the best part. It's been a lot of fun, and we know there's a lot left out there yet, but we're heading in the right direction.
So girlfriend's family in town for Thanksgiving. You have the game, and then what's the plan? You just go back home and then do dinner?
Yeah, probably go back home and do dinner, and then Nebraska plays Iowa Black Friday. That's what I'm thinking about. Watch little brother. So that's kind of the ritual every Black Friday. Flip on the Huskers. Hopefully we can get a W to end the season, but yeah, that's the plan.
So he gets to watch you on Thanksgiving Day, you get to watch him on Black Friday.
Yep, we swapped, so it's been pretty fun watching.
Awesome. Thanks, Luke, so much for joining.
Yeah, of course, appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Luke Gifford for having joined us. Calvin, special teams. We talked about Luke's big game that he had against the Packers. Well, how about Brett Maher's big game that he just had in Minnesota? He was 4 of 4, really 5 of 5 if you want to get into it. 4 of 4 field goals, good from 53, good from 50, good from 60 twice late in the second quarter. What'd you make of probably, talk about comeback Cowboys player from where he was in 19 to where he is today?
Let me tell you something. Remember last week I told you I didn't really care about talking about kickers unless they did something. Mm-hmm. Remember? You were there, right? I think you were there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you heard it? Okay. Brett Maher, I want to talk to him. He kicked 2 60-yard field goals at the end of the first half against the Vikings. That was impressive. Brett Maher, from the first time he was here to now, has really matured, not only mentally but physically. And to do what he did, you know, we were talking to him on Monday, the day after that Vikings game. And real quick, I said, you know, it looked as if when they had that little ruckus, when they were trying to review CeeDee Lamb's catch on the sidelines to see if it was a legitimate catch. And then he kicks the field goal and he barely makes it. And then he kicked it the second time, and it was just – it might have been good from 70 yards. That's how good it was. He had a lot of power on that leg there. And I asked him, I said, you know, how did you do that? How did you get that focus? And he was like, man, I'm neutral, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and this team is a very neutral team. This team just moves on from the play to the next play to the next game. And even Mike McCarthy, when we were talking to him after beating the Vikings game, he said, we've moved on from that because we got the Giants on Thursday. You know, this team just moves on very quickly. They're very resilient, something that you had wrote about early in the season, mentally tough. And that's what you have to be, mentally tough to, you know, make deep playoff runs. And I'm not worried about Brett Maher anymore. I probably was early in the season, but I'm really not now. He is really off to a fantastic start of the season.
I spoke to Steven Jones after Sunday's game. We're walking off the field, and Maher came up, and he just like shook his head and laughed about just how dominant he's been, which is kind of a strange word to apply to a kicker. But I mean, I don't know the first word that comes to mind. It's the first word. And it just, he recalled how, you know, they signed him toward the back end of training camp. And to think that this is a problem position. Cowboys brought in two guys to compete. Jonathan Garibay and Liram Hirulahu. Almost blanked on the name. Sorry, Liram.
It's okay. He'll be all right.
But he, you know, and then, you know, they were underwhelmed. They felt like their guy wasn't there. And then they have a kicking competition. Brett Maher impresses with his kickoffs. He actually wasn't the most accurate field goal kicker there. There was one kicker who made one more field goal than him. But Cowboys felt comfortable on Maher. They signed him, and I mean, borderline Pro Bowler. I mean, people can vote for Pro Bowl, and I have a hard time saying that he doesn't deserve to represent the NFC. So impressive. Also impressive, Micah Parsons, for reasons not only on the football field. This is the holiday edition. We're on Thanksgiving. We're going to talk Micah Parsons next.
Hey, listeners, this is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
In honor of Thanksgiving Day, we've decided not to disagree about something and instead focus on the positives. I feel like crying. Micah Parsons can almost do no wrong around here, and Michael spoke to him about a turkey giveaway he had before the holiday.
Yeah, so last Friday at the Star in a parking lot, Micah Parsons, it was like 45 degrees, blustery wind, and he and defensive tackle Osa Odighizuwa were outside just passing out turkeys after turkey after turkey. Micah Parsons arranged this whole giveaway where he personally provided and also pooled together with help from some teammates, among others, and got 1,000 turkeys and also 500 tablets that I think we're going to be given on another day. But 1,000 turkeys given to families in need. The Cowboys on like that Monday, it was a Friday. On that Monday, they set up a conference call and met with Salvation Army. Salvation Army identified families in the Dallas-Fort Worth area who needed help for the holiday. And so personally, a lot of them were able to receive a turkey from Micah Parsons. And that, I think, is not surprising because of everything we've seen from Parsons to this point. That's where we pick up from Friday.
And you're, what, 23 years old?
Yeah.
You got a lot of football left in front of you, but do you ever think about what you'd want to do after all this, after the career?
I told myself I'm going on a 2-year mission trip to Africa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to be backpacking Africa and Europe and, you know, just really take my time and see the world and help change it. Just to embrace everything that I have and understand how good we have it as Americans and help embrace different cultures and accept cultures and show even my culture of how I was raised. And, you know, I don't think our problem is just here. Our problem's all across the world.
Michael, I really love the fact how Parsons is already thinking about his, you know, his future, because he's like 23 years old. He's a baby, you know. And I had an earlier talk with Micah about his maturity level and talking about going to Africa when his career ends and that kind of thing. I really love the way Micah has been these last 2 years, really, because we really didn't know this kid, you know, coming out of Penn State. And now he's all over the place and just having a great time. I really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, you mentioned he's so young at 23, but I think he's young for the NFL, but he's not young when it comes to life. Like, this is someone who has seen a lot and is very perceptive of, it seems to me, just from talking to him, talking to those around him, very perceptive of those around him and who's around him. You look back just the way he grew up in Harrisburg, you know, coming from really nothing. You know, I wrote a story about him. I went to Harrisburg, you know, talked to different family members and friends, and you can just appreciate how he had challenges, both at home, challenges with, you know, school. I mean, he had a year where he was held back, and he had teachers and administrators tell him that he wasn't good enough. And that competitive fire that you see on the football field, that you see playing chess or whatever other activity, bowling, that he does, kind of came out, and he ends up graduating high school early, and he gets his college degree from Penn State early. And so he's different. And so I think the maturity is well beyond his years. And so to hear him talking about, you know, traveling the world for 2 years and impacting lives and learning from other cultures and you know, all of that that you heard from him, I just think it's no surprise at this point, because that is who Micah Parsons is, and it has nothing to do with the All-Pro AP Defensive Player of the Year favorite that he is.
Yeah, and look, we're not trying to say Micah Parsons is a saint, because he's not. And part of our discussions with Micah over the last couple of months, he does admit, hey, he was immature at Penn State. He admits that, and he's still learning. But so far, so good for Micah Parsons. This is one of the good guys in this Cowboys locker room. And you know what, Michael? That's all the time we've got for Sports Day Cowboys this week. I want to thank everyone for listening.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving, Calvin. The show is produced by Damon Marks, and you can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You can also find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen, and you also find a special membership offer there just for listeners. And we also want to hear more from you, so email us your questions, comments, and voice memos at dmncowboys@dallasnews.com. And you can also ping us directly on Twitter @dmn_cowboys and on Facebook @CowboysFanCentral. For the news, I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We'll see you next week.